MZTV.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my Catholic upbringing today. I was almost going to say my spiritual upbringing, but there wasn't any of that. It was my Catholic upbringing, and I will do that as a means of working toward a quote that a woman where I worked at the hospital, and at Altman Hospital in Canton, Ohio, a woman that I worked with found out that I left the church, and what she said to me is going to be really instructive. Hello, everybody. This is Martin Zender. Here we are, beginning another week of broadcast excellence. So, my mom was Catholic. My dad wasn't anything, because they made my dad, when he was a kid, they made him go to summer Bible camp. They gave him a chocolate chip cookie and told him to live like Jesus. Oh, my dad, X-ray vision, saw right through that crap. Saw right through it. He was suspicious of anything religious. Of course, that sounds good, but it has a flip side. He associated God completely with the institution. He could not divorce the true God from the institution. Except in the last month of his life, he asked me some questions. So, you know, it could be that something stuck there as he was dying of cancer. But my mom was another case altogether. She was totally a slave to the Catholic system. Just bought into it. And because of that, because my dad was such a gentleman, because my dad respected my mom so much, and because he wanted, you know, the family to always stay together, we went to church together as a family. I went to a Catholic grade school. It was a great education. The nuns were a little off, some of them. Actually, the best nun was my first grade nun, Sister Judith. She was like, I had two normal nuns my entire scholastic career. There weren't just nuns. It was nuns and lay teachers as well. But I don't know if I ever heard me tell of Sister Lorena in the seventh grade. She taught us music. We're talking old school nuns. So seventh grade, this is like 1972, 73, and they had the black and the white headband thing. I don't think they call it a headband. What do they call it? A wimple. Isn't that the guy that tells people not to squeeze a Charmin? Oh, it's Whipple. Okay. But anyway, she had the voice of an angel. I mean, this woman could sing. And even we, stupid seventh graders, could recognize her talent. She would teach us certain songs, and then she would go off on a classical piece of music, and her voice would soar and dip, and we were just all, like, astounded. What is this lady doing wearing a wimple? Oh, it turns out she eventually, I love to tell this, she eventually quit the nunhood and became a lounge singer in Las Vegas. True story, happy story. Yay for Sister Lorena. Thank you, Sister Lorena. But anyway, my parents enrolled me in a Catholic school, and we went to Catholic church together. And, of course, kids are just indoctrinated into it. My dad never bought into it, never, but he did it for family togetherness, and I love my dad for that. My parents were both deceased, but my dad stayed together for the family. Now, he knew it was all BS, stand up, kneel, bam. He did the whole rigmarole, except the communion. He didn't take the communion, but he didn't sing any of the hymns, come to think of it. I didn't either. But what a great man for the sake of the family. However, once my sister Kelly and I grew up and left home, my dad split the scene. Yes, he did. No, you know what? It might have been before that. What? I can't remember what precipitated my dad leaving. But anyway, at some point, my dad said, I don't really think I'm going to come here anymore. And then there were three. My mom, my sister, and me. Well, my sister Kelly was the next one to leave. I don't know how it happened, but then there were two, my mom and me. And we church hopped a little bit. You know, I was raised in Canton, Ohio, and we went to St. Joan of Arc Catholic Church on West Tuscarawas Street my whole life, my whole scholastic life. And then for a while, we went to St. Joe's, which was also on West Tuscarawas Street. But somehow, when it was just my mom and me, we ended up at St. Mike's. Was that St. Mike? No, it was St. John's downtown. St. John's downtown, Canton. Now, this was around April of 1979. This is when I felt the call. This is when I saw Jesus of Nazareth, the Easter special broadcast, and I was just undone. And you know the story. I went into my room, and after watching the Passion, watching my Lord drag that cross to Calvary, and I just broke down and wept. And I said, I have to know you. I remember saying that over and over and over again. I have to know you. And he took me up on it. But it was not long after that when my mom and I were walking out of St. John's one day, and we were walking back to the car, and I turned to her and I said, "Mom, I'm sorry. I just can't come here anymore." Now, I think back on that day, and I couldn't have done anything else, but I really feel bad for my mom. You know, the cheese stands alone. At that point, she was the only one. And she continued going. You think that stopped her? No. She continued to go. And I was working at Altman Hospital at the time as an orderly or nurse's aide, whatever you want to call it. And there was a housekeeper there. And she and I would talk. And we often talk about religious topics a little bit. But she found out that I quit the Catholic Church. And listen to her answer. Listen to what she said. This is so instructive, and it informs my topic today. Very serious look on her face when she found out I wasn't going to church anymore. She said, "How could you leave the mother church?" In this woman's mind, she could not fathom how anyone would leave the, quote, safety, the surety, the systematizing of the deception, although she didn't see it that way, of course, but she definitely considered the Catholic Church her home. And the Catholic Church has built the system, and all religions have built the system so well, and they rule with fear, absolute fear. But the fear is not overt. It is the subtle knowledge, and you know that they are selling the idea that if you leave here, you will die. If you leave here, if you leave this institution, this large, many people, architecturally beautiful system, if you leave this, you are going into a spiritual wasteland. You will be an orphan. You will be blown about by every wind of everything. You will be alone in the cold, cruel world. You will die. You can't make it on your own. You can't make it. It's the same thing that the government says to people. You can't make it on your own. You need us. And they develop programs that keep you as a victim. They keep you needing them. And they do it. They rule by fear. You need our handouts. You need to vote us back into power. We're the ones who give you things for free. We're the ones who keep you alive. In the meantime, what they actually have you in is slavery, the government. But it's the same thing with the church. They have you in slavery. But you're afraid, and the government makes you think that you're incapable of making a living on your own. Like, don't try it, kid. Don't risk it. You can't go out there on your own. Are you kidding? There's wolves out there. They're going to eat you alive. Stay here. You're safe. We'll just keep giving you your welfare check, or we'll just keep, you know, giving you your milk and your bread. And so, and this is the lie. The lie is based on fear, and the church is the same exact thing. they had that worked into the people in our Lord's Day too. Well, if you got excommunicated from the temple, oh my God. I mean, there might have actually been some physical duress there, because as far as if you were exiled from the system, I think you were probably in danger of maybe not eating, or I don't know. I don't know how they did it. I don't know how they did it, but every ecclesiastical system has an underlying fear motivation for you to stay in there, and they do it subtly. I guess if you told them you're going to quit, then they'll take you in the office and they'll tell you overtly, you can't survive out there without us. You're going to be without a head. That's what they tell you in the Christian church. You need headship. If you leave this with our deacons and our ministers and our pastors, you won't have any headship. And now I realize, what part of the scriptures don't you understand? That Jesus Christ is the head of the body. Jesus Christ is the head of the body. That headship's not good enough for you? No, it's absolutely not good enough for them. It is absolutely not good enough for them that Jesus Christ is the head of the body. And if you're a member of the body of Christ, when you leave the institution, your head goes with you. And it's not that your head is going with you, it's that you're going with your head. It's just that the head and the body are inseparable. But they think that the pastor is your head. They actually think that. They actually think that. They have this hierarchy, and they take care of you. And you're going to die out there, boy, if you try to make it alone. You can't do it. Don't risk it. Don't risk it. And that's why this woman couldn't believe that I would go out on my own into the wilderness, where I would be consumed by the devil and his minions. But the truth is, and I'm going to read you a passage before I finish here from my book, How to Quit Church Without Quitting God. The truth is that it's the only way you can thrive is to leave the system. God is not, relatively speaking, in the system. It's not where you find God. That's where you find lies about God. You find God outside of the walls of the institution. This is the scriptural precedent, and God has never done it any other way. It's the mainstream system that is the one that kills the truth and kills the truth seekers and kills the truth havers. They cannot stand the competition. But so many people stay. So many people don't leave. And it's because of fear. It's because they think they're going to be orphaned outside those walls. They don't know how to study the scriptures on their own. They don't have the Spirit of God. I mean, they have enough of spirit to breathe and for their heart to beat, but they don't have the Spirit of God in the institution because they don't feel safe outside of the institution. They don't see Jesus Christ as their head, because if he was, then they could thrive outside of the system. And it's the same way with the medical system. I told you what they told me. You need to go through this protocol. You need 35 radiation sessions. Literally, that's what they told me. I need 35 radiation sessions to make sure what? I don't have my cancer anymore. The doctor removed it. It's just what they do. It's just what they put you through. And of course, chemotherapy. And the subtle suggestion is that, I felt this fear. I felt it, that if I don't do this, I might die. And that's what all your friends say. Some of my friends, all of you are so great, but there's one or two people who subtly suggest that if you're not going to do chemo and radiation. And so if you end up dying, then it's your fault. But they don't wait for you to die. They tell you, they suggest to you, it's very subtle, but it's there. If you don't do what the doctor tells you to do, you will die. Of course, this is absolutely false. In fact, you're more likely to die from following the doctor's instructions. I know some people, I have many friends in the medical institution, they won't like hearing that. And perhaps it was a bit exaggerated on my part. But I believe the underlying truth of that. One of my favorite statistics, I think it was my ex-father-in-law that told me this. There was a doctor in a particular town, and at one point, all the doctors in that town went on strike. It was a great strike. All the doctors didn't work for a month or something. And during that month, the death rate went down. Yeah, if you want to die of a virus or something or some disease, you go into a hospital where it's crawling with viruses and bugs and diseases and people who invent techniques to damage you in the with the facade of helping you. And it's the same thing in the Christian religion also. With the guise of helping you, they're actually hurting you. They're destroying you. If you do what they say in the Christian religion, you will die aeonian death. Their doctrines lead to aeonian death. Their teachings lead to aeonian death. The Trinity, free will, eternal torment, all these things, a denial of the sufficiency of Christ, a denial of the death of Christ, you know the drill. All the teachings in the Christian religion are demonic, and they lead to death. So the irony is that the only way you can find life and get life is to leave the institution. And as far as the medical world goes, I'm finding life and I'm getting life from an independent seeker, an independent, very famous person in Peru who is an expert in fighting cancer with plants, with natural things that God made. And I feel far safer with this guy. But not many people can handle that. Not many people. Again, there are some people I know that can't handle me doing that. You are going to die if you don't do what the doctor says. If you don't do what your priest tells you. If you don't go to confession, you're going to die. If you don't take communion, you're out of God's circle. God can no longer be friendly with you. You're not no longer on good terms with the deity if you don't go to communion, if you don't take confession, if you don't go to mass. Oh boy, they got the system down pat, and they do that over and over and over and over again. And how could you leave the mother church? That's what this woman said to me, in all sincerity. I mean, she really was terrified. And yet, what did I find outside the walls? I found life. I found truth. Because I can read for myself, and the scriptures are plain. Truth is found outside of the institution. I have several examples here of the things that happened outside of the institutional walls. Jesus stills a storm on a boat. I won't give the references here, but you know these passages. Jesus heals the sick and multiplies the loaves and the fishes on a hillside. Jesus declares himself to be the Messiah at a well. Jesus raises Jairus' daughter from the dead at home. Peter raises a woman named Dorcas from the dead at home. A Roman jailer and his family receive Christ through the teaching of Paul at home. Mary, the sister of Martha, sits at the feet of Jesus at home. A woman named Lydia and her friends receive Paul's teachings beside a river. Jesus gives his soul for the sins of the world outside the gates of Jerusalem. And then I say here, to be fair, a few noteworthy events did occur at formal religious gatherings. One Sabbath day at the synagogue in Nazareth, the people tried to throw Jesus over a cliff. A little while later at the temple in Jerusalem, several clergy members spit into his face. So yes, some notable things do happen inside the institution. My wife and I, the mother of my children, we had our first child, Gabe, in the hospital, and the institution about killed her. I can't tell you the nightmare that it was, but after we went through the institutional ringer, we decided that's it. If we have any more kids, we're having them at home, and we did. Our next two sons, Luke and Paul, were born at home. At home. How many things did I just read here? Spiritual events, great events that happened at home, away from the institution, at home. At home. But my God, when people heard we were having our kids at home, oh, you can't, they're going to die. Your kids are going to die. Your wife's going to die. You'll probably die somehow. You have to be at the hospital. Oh, with all the viruses and all the diseases and all the doctors that put my wife's legs in the stirrup so that she has to push the child against gravity to get it out. With all their needles and their medications and their ridiculous breathing instructions. I'll never forget what our midwife said to us when my son Luke was born. She said to my wife, "Marcia, if you feel like ordering a pizza on the day of the birth, you do that. If you feel like going for a walk, you do that. If you feel like listening to your favorite music, you do that. You breathe the way you want to breathe. You do what you want to do. I am here to participate in this beautiful expression of God." And we were so at peace when we heard that. So at peace. It's the same peace that Maria and I felt when we talked to this guy in Peru after hearing the doctor tell me that I'm going to have to endure 35 radiation treatments and take chemotherapy. This man was saying, if you eat this and take this supplement, if you do this and this and this, if you get your sunshine, if you give your body rest, if you fast this, you know, it is impossible for your cancer to return. It would be impossible. Thank God, praise Jesus. I was getting all Pentecostal. Just about got Pentecostal. So good, so good. The life breathed into me outside the institution. Outside the institution. They will kill you in the institution. The religious institution, the educational institution, the medical institution. Now I'm going to read another passage from How to Quit Church Without Quitting God. This book is available online. I'd recommend it to one and to all. This is the first book I ever wrote. I will end with this for the day. There is the false and there is the true. This is page 45. How to Quit Church Without Quitting God. There is the false and there is the true. Speaking to the spiritual seeker, I understand you wanting nothing to do with the false. The tricky part is that the false and the true both use the same names. Both say God and both say Jesus Christ. But does it mean that both are worshiping the same beings? No. The false are worshiping the pop icon, God and Christ, while the true are worshiping the real God and Christ. Or at least they are seeking the real and will not be satisfied until they find him. What will you lose by flinging the man-made walls? The truth? Just as trees do not grow in alleys, truth does not live between man-made walls. Truth abides in the heart, and I would add, in the cerebrum, in the thinking, in the understanding. If the truth is in your heart and in your mind, you can't lose it. Truth is not so fragile. If it's something besides truth there, you don't want that anyway. It will blow away in your wake as you walk out the door. Walls come and go. But truth endures. You can run and jump and live your happy life without worrying about losing truth, the real truth. This is not like the truth you had in the institution. That truth used to wait around to see what you would do with it, to see if you were worthy of it or could live up to its standards. And then, based on your behavior, it would adjust its opinion of you. It could damn you as easily as bless you, scare you as easily as comfort you. It all depended on you. Real truth is not like that. It's stronger and more sure of itself. Human foibles cannot hope to alter it. So when you are far from the noise and the crowds, take out the truth that remains in your heart and in your mind. Withdraw the real thing and look at it. Turn it every which way. Turn it in the shade and in the sun. Examine it with a magnifying glass. Toss it in your dryer at home and tumble it on hot. Truth will survive your every scrutiny because it has nothing to hide. No amount of rough treatment can diminish it. It's truth. Realizing this will cause you to relax for perhaps the first time in your life. In such a reclining position, you can now enjoy the truth in whatever new framework you choose. Serenade it with whatever new music you want, in whatever new environment. It is now yours, and it will never leave you. God and Christ are ours. Where did we find the true God and the true Christ? In the institutional walls? No, we found them outside. God said he does not give us a spirit of timidity, but of power, love, and sanity. It is the timid, the shy, those who do not trust God, who stay in the institution where it feels safe to them because of the number of people, because of the architecture, because of the furniture, because of the ritual. But you are far from safe in the religious institution. Truth lies at the well, beside the river, beside the Sea of Galilee. Jesus Christ is still, in a sense, wandering on the mountaintops and the valleys. He's still walking on the water on the Sea of Galilee and healing people at home. Truth lives outside the institution. And it's my prayer that everyone hearing my voice, I know my audience, you all have found truth outside the institutional walls. So anyone still behind those walls, I pray that you find it, that God give you the boldness and the spirit to seek him outside of the religious institutions of human. Within those walls lies aeonian death. Outside of them is God and Christ waiting, who will bless you with aeonian life.